Over a period of 2 or 3 years, I was gambling my salary almost immediately. I'd be waiting at the cash machine at midnight, waiting for the money to go into my bank account and withdrawing it. The years of gambling, the years of lies, the years of borrowing money, stealing money, doing whatever I had to do to get gamble again. It was crazy. It was like that delusional. I was completely delusional.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the One Day at a Time podcast. Today's guest is Matt Smith. He is the Director of External Affairs at Bet No More UK, and he's a person with lived experience with gambling harm. Matt, thanks for joining.
Rob, good to see you again.
I really appreciate you taking the time today. We should just get right into the beginning of the story. Why is it that we're talking today?
You know, we're talking today because both of us have lived experience of gambling harm. We have that mutual connection. But we're also, I think, both of us are trying to make things better for the future and help support individuals, make sure that gambling is safer for people in the future to stop others from getting harm. You know, I've been in recovery now for 10 years. I started my journey of recovery on the 5th of November, 2014. It took me a while before I started working in this space. And previously, and we're sure we'll get onto this shortly, is I worked in the radio and television industry for 15 years in sports broadcasting. So completely different career change for me, but really good that I'm able to use my professional experience mixed with my lived experience.
Yeah, I love that. A lot of times what I like to say here on the channel is like using the negatives that occurred in your life to create positives for someone else is probably the most meaningful work that you can do. So, I mean, congratulations on the time clean. Congrats on picking up this work. You say you were in radio and television. That's a very unique perspective. And I think that as you're telling your story, people are going to see why it's so unique. When did it all start? When was the first time you made a bet?
Well, I gambled when I was at school, you know, and often the case, I hear many, many stories from people like us who've got experience of gambling. And I started at school. Here in England, we have a game people play at school, they used to, where we throw a coin up against the wall. The closest coin to the wall wins the money. We call it tipsy. In where I come from, but I've heard it called lots and lots of names over the years. And I started playing that game at school because, you know what, Rob, it made me feel part of something. You know, I felt like part of a group. I felt that I made friends through playing that game. Even at that stage, at the age of 14, 15, I was starting to cause harm to people. I was causing harm to my mother because I was stealing off her to play this game. I wasn't engaging with friends in ways that I should have been. It was all about playing that game. So the harm to other people, little known I was harming myself as well, which we'll get onto soon enough, but to them, I was already starting that. When I reflect on that now, that's the bit, you know, that really gets to me because I think to myself, my mum, who has been with me every step of the way, she's 83 now, she has always had unconditional love for me, but even then I was hurting her at that age by stealing money, and she was on her own. She was bringing me up by herself. You know, my father left when I was young, so you know, it was very difficult for her and for me to be putting that added pressure on top. It's only now that I'm older and I've looked back and reflected on my behaviors, I can see the pain that that would have caused.
When you think back to kind of the thought process, if you can remember, because I can barely remember anything I thought as a 14-year-old, what was the mindset when you were taking the money? Was it borrowing or was it stealing?
Yeah, borrowing. Absolutely. I'm going to win today and I'm going to put that money back and more. That's what I'm going to do. And that was my thinking all the way through my gambling. I'm going to borrow this money off somebody. That's how I thought it was borrowing, but it wasn't borrowing because I never asked for it. I just took it. And my mum used to say to me, Rob, sometimes, I'm sure I had more money in my purse. I can't work out where it's gone. There's nobody else living there apart from her and I. Mm-hmm. So at times she may well have been questioning her own sanity because of my behavior. And then the manipulation, no, it can't. You must have just got it wrong. You know, I always thought I was borrowing the money and that went on all the way through my gambling.
So you're from the UK. You grew up in Birmingham?
That's right.
Birmingham.
Yep.
Gambling there starts at 18 years old, technically, to be legally gambling on, say, sports or at the casino. Do you remember the first time it shifted from pitching coins to going over to the commercial type gambling?
Yeah. So we played slot machines, you know, in pubs. And that's when I was at university. I went to university and I started gambling in pubs. And again, the same thinking, this is how I'm going to make friends. I'm going to go out to the pub with them. I'm going to ask them to come out with me for a drink. But actually, I'm not going to spend any time with them when I'm there. I'm just going to go and play the slot machine. I mean, that was the crazy thinking, that I wanted to socialize. I wanted to be around people and make friends and feel closer connections to others. But then when I got there, I'll just go and play the slot machine. So what happens if you keep repeating that behavior? Those friends just start to detach from you because they're not getting anything from the relationship. And I could never kind of work out why. What's wrong with me, you know? Mm. Now I look back at my behavior and I can see what was wrong there. So, yeah, I started playing slot machines when I was at university, thinking it was extra income. Then having to ring home, ring my mother and my grandmother and say, I've got no money, I'm a poor student, poor me, can you help me, you know, type thing. Yeah. And that went on for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And they must have been thinking, what is going on with this guy? You know, what is he doing there? And that's it. Went on for 3 years, playing slot machines, mm-hmm. not paying my rent for my student accommodation, not being able to go and do things because I didn't have the money to do it because I gambled it on the slot machines. And that was it then. That was it. For a long time, I did not gamble. I got a job pretty quickly after university and I went and worked for a radio station here in the UK called Talk Sport. It's a very big radio station, broadcasts across the whole of the UK, has over 3 million listeners a week. It's a big deal here and it broadcasts live sport. And I was very lucky. I came out of university and I got a job there straight away, working as a technical producer. I moved to London and I started to earn good money at a young age. I was like 22, you know, when I started working there, something like that. So I was earning good money, living in London, had a girlfriend. Life was going good for me. And I didn't gamble from 2001 through till about 2008.
Was there any particular reason for that?
I was very focused on my career. I really enjoyed what I did. I had a very supportive boss. So I was very lucky that the boss there who was, you know, he was approaching retirement age and he was very good to me, almost like a father figure at times, to be honest. His name was Bill Ridley. He was a brilliant man, got nothing but good things to say about him. He really looked after me and I managed to move up the ladder very quickly. And then things were good at home as well. You know, I had my girlfriend at the time. We had a good relationship. It was all good. It was all good.
When does it start to slip? Because it sounds awesome. It sounds like, you know, you said about 6 or 7 years where things are going really well. You're progressing up the ladder. What sets you back?
2008, my boss, Bill Ridley, was mentioned. Bill said to me, I'm retiring. And I was devastated. I mean, I was absolutely devastated. You know, I described him as a, you know, like a kind of almost like a father figure, you know. He always looked out for me. Now, luckily, I had a very good relationship with our chief executive. So I knew that I had that to fall back on if the new boss that was coming in didn't really like me. But we were hoping somebody would get promoted from within and that, you know, everything would just carry on. But it didn't. And we had somebody new come in and him and I just did not get on. He didn't want me doing that job. He wanted to put his own stamp on things. I wanted to do that job. Luckily, I had the ear of the chief executive, so I managed to stay in that job, but I was hanging on and I was getting more and more stressed. And gambling just suddenly came back into my mind, Rob. I don't even know how. I don't even know the first time that I went into a betting shop and placed a bet again. I can't even remember. I remember the betting shops that I used to go to in London near where I worked, but I can't remember what I did, why I went there. You know, when I started going there, I felt like I was in another planet. I was in another world. I was away from work. I was away from all of that stress. As you start doing that, people start wondering, where is he? Why is he going away for so long? He's not been in the office all day. People start to think a little bit, you know, maybe about your behavior. And things started to go downhill for me. Over a period of 2 or 3 years, I was gambling my salary almost immediately. I'd be waiting at the cash machine at, you know, kind of midnight, waiting for the money to go into my bank account and withdrawing it. Or if I was at home, I'd be waiting on my laptop for the money to come in. I won and then very quickly lost considerable amounts of money, so, you know, life-changing amounts, which I could never hold on to. You know, I would just gamble them straight off again. I've always said that the money's never important in terms of talking about the addiction, because it wasn't about the money. It was about how I behaved. And this just went on. You know, we talked earlier about borrowing money. You know, I was borrowing money off colleagues and making excuses why I was doing that. Just behavior that I wouldn't ever dream of doing if I was like not gambling. And this went on. Colleagues could see the signs of this unraveling. And one of my colleagues, and he's now an ambassador at Bet No More, one of our ambassadors, Mark Saggers. And Mark and I were in New Zealand in 2011 at the Rugby World Cup, another massive event for us. And I remember being sat in a restaurant with Mark, and he said to me, "Matt, I'd like to talk to you about gambling." And he said it in the most empathic, kind, compassionate way. But Rob, I wasn't ready for that conversation. That was like, I was like, whoa, hang on, I've been found out. You know, that's how I thought, first of all. And I kind of just kind of palmed it off, the conversation. But what Mark did at that moment is he planted the seed. Mm. He planted the seed in me.
Was that the first time that someone had said something to you other than maybe like a passing remark about your gambling?
Yeah, it was. It was the first time anybody had ever mentioned it. That was it. But I was in it. You know, I was in it. I was in a pile of debt as well at that point. I still wasn't ready. The stigma and the shame that I felt to say to him at that time, even, I knew it was coming from a kind place, to still say, yeah, I have got a problem. What can I do about this?
I understand that. That happened to me as well. In that time period of like 2008 to 2011, was the gambling that you were doing still like the fixed odds betting terminals in the pubs, or was it also other kinds of gambling?
Yeah, all sorts of gambling. So we have these kind of fixed odds betting terminals in the betting shops as well, which are like roulette wheels, blackjack. And I'd go and play them. You just feed money into the machine. I'd be gambling on the horse racing on the TV and all of this stuff, even the cartoon racing. We have like this virtual racing. You know, this is how crazy my gambling was, you know, like gambling on cartoons, you know. And then I'd go to casinos, I'd gamble online. I mean, I know this sounds crazy to you, Rob, but we had online gambling here in 2010. We had it. I was on my laptop. I mean, I must have smashed up four laptops and put my fist through the screen. Really? You know, because I was so angry with the results every time. None of this behavior was me. I've always been quite a calm person. Never really get agitated, never really got flustered by things. You know, my partner Millie now always says to me, "I can't believe how calm you are all the time about things," like things that she gets like wound up about just like that. I'm just like, whatever. So that was never me, but the addiction turned me into that person. And so it went on.
Yeah.
And then the world came crumbling down around me. You know, I've been borrowing all this money, stealing off people, doing things I shouldn't have been doing. I went to the Euros in 2012, the Euro Football Championships in Poland and Ukraine. And I remember walking up to the opening game in Poland, in Warsaw, where I was due to work with my colleagues that day. And I knew all the harm I'd caused. I knew it was all coming back on me and I could not face it. And I just turned around, sat in a hotel bar and drank myself into an oblivion. All of my colleagues worried about me. Where is he supposed to be here? Not hearing a word from me. And that went on for about 24 hours. I eventually got somebody to take me from Warsaw back to Ukraine in a car, which took us hours. We ended up sleeping in the middle of nowhere in the car. It was just crazy. I got and seen my colleagues and I said, "I just want to go home." And I just burst into tears. And that was the start. And they knew what had happened. It had all started to come out. It had all started to unravel. The years of gambling, the years of lies, the years of borrowing money, stealing money, doing whatever I had to do to get gamble again, all started to unravel right in front of everybody.
So it wasn't like one big loss happened and you were scrambling to cover it. It was the accumulation of just years of stacking.
Lie after lie on top of lie.
Yeah.
It was that I couldn't cope with. The money, yes, of course, I couldn't live properly. I didn't have the money. You know, I couldn't pay my rent. I was getting myself into a lot of financial difficulty. I had a lot of debt. But it was the lie after lie. I couldn't keep up anymore, Rob. It was lie on top after lie, you know. And I just was like, I've had enough of these. It was causing me real mental anguish. I was very anxious. I was very stressed. So I came back to the UK. I got in touch with one of my colleagues. It was a guy called Ronnie Irani. Ronnie played cricket for England and Essex. Very well-known sportsman. And I worked with Ronnie at TalkSport. He was one of our hosts. And I said to Ronnie, "I'm in trouble." And he said, "Okay, you come and stay with us. My driver will pick you up from the airport." Went and stayed with them. Yeah, Davey's driver came and picked me up, went and stayed with them. They said, "Okay, so the condition of you staying here is you do not gamble and you do not drink." I'm a gambling addict. I'm a compulsive gambler. I can't stop, right? So I'm off again. You know, I'm staying in this little, kind of granny annex that they had next to the house, which had my own like little living area and bed and everything. I couldn't stop gambling. I was on my iPad gambling all the time. Eventually, I couldn't stay there any longer because it all just went wrong. But meanwhile, obviously, I wasn't working. I was under investigation at work because of what had happened. I met up with our CEO, Scott. We met in London in a hotel, and he said, Matt, we love you. We love all the work you've done over the years, but we cannot continue like this. Like this, you have to stop gambling. Otherwise, that's it. He said, if you can stop gambling, I will try my best to pave the way forwards for you to come back. Despite the mess, despite everything, he said to me, I remember him saying, how much do you owe? He said, the money though, he said, we could fix that, but it's not going to fix you. Mm. Do you know what I mean? And, okay. That was the best thing he ever said by saying that, because imagine if they'd have got to dig me out of the hole financially. You know what happens, the story goes, Rob. You then zero and you're back again. Okay, that's it. It's all good. I used to think the answer to my problems was paying everybody off the money. But I don't forget that you've stolen off them and borrowed huge amounts of money. You know, that's only one element of it, paying it back. And eventually, after about 6 months of going to therapy and doing lots of different things, they just said, we can't have you here anymore. We know you're still gambling, which they did. I got caught out and I couldn't go back. I was devastated. I think I was like 35 at that point. I ended up going back to my mum's, you know. I mean, I moved out of home when I was 18. So to go back 17 years later was a big deal. And then the harm continued because I hadn't stopped gambling. I was taking money off her, repeating the behavior that I was doing when I was a child.
To try to reconcile this for someone that might not have a gambling problem, you reach this point where you say, okay, I want to stop this. I'm sick of the lies. I'm sick of what's going on. You have open and honest conversations with people at work about what was happening, more or less. You start to get into it a little bit with them. You go to therapy. The therapy doesn't help. Nothing changes.
Because I didn't want to stop. I did not want to stop gambling. I hadn't committed at that point to stopping gambling in my mind. And I was going to GA meetings. That was my first kind of visit into Gamblers Anonymous. And it was all about me and my ego. And I was going into these meetings and I was just like, yeah, you know, me. On the way to the meeting, I'd gamble and I'd gamble on the way back. I didn't want to stop, is the truth. And then I got another job eventually, carried on gambling, carried on hurting people, carried on harming people. The pain I was in, this constant pain. I mean, at that point when I was in Singapore, I then went on to Brazil after that to work at the 2014 World Cup. I didn't speak to my own mother for like 18 months. I couldn't face it. I literally had like a kind of burner phone, if you like, you know, just to, I don't even know who I was keeping in touch with now. I think just John, who we talked about earlier, like he'd asked me like, where are you? What are you doing? You know, he knew my problems. He knew all about it. And he was worried about me. Yeah, I didn't speak to my mum for so long. I was so full of shame. So she was, you know, starting to get older. And she was just full of worry and wondering where I was and if I was even still alive. And I'd send a card at Christmas just to at least acknowledge I'm still alive. And that was it. It was just a dreadful existence and I couldn't stop gambling.
It's probably tough for someone to understand that hasn't gone through it. But it's like you have this one statement of, I'm sick of the lies, I'm sick of what I'm doing. But you're turning around and you're doing basically the same thing. What were you getting out of the therapy sessions, the Gamblers Anonymous sessions, the conversations that you were having? You know, you weren't talking to too many people, but when you were, if you were being honest or partially honest, what in your mind was the motivation for that?
At that point, nothing. I wasn't getting anything out of it. I was doing it to really, that was when I was still kind of, when I was still at Talk Sport, and I was doing it to appease them and say, look, I'm doing something about this. I didn't want to stop gambling. So it wasn't until later on where things changed. And how that changed was I got back from that World Cup in Brazil after earning a considerable amount of money for being there working. And I'm surprised I even still got the job because my reputation was kind of in tatters at that point. I came back to UK and bear in mind, when I lived in London, I had a nice apartment I lived in overlooking London. I could see all the big buildings, beautiful. I was up on top of a hill. I had a great place to live. I had that good life, traveling the world, watching sport, for like a dream life, if you like. I came back from Brazil with one bag and I had nowhere to go. Bearing in mind at this point, I hadn't spoken to my mum for so long. I was still ashamed and embarrassed. So I contacted somebody who I'd not spoken to for probably 15 years, really, you know, and I said to them, I need somewhere to stay for the night. I ended up staying there for about 6 weeks, but it was a terrible environment for me to stay. There was a lot of drugs and alcohol abuse going on there. It was a really bad place for me to stay. And whilst I was there, I started to reach out to a few people. When I was in that period of that 6 months before I left TalkSport, I met a gentleman by the name of Paul Spanger. And Paul came to see me in London, and Ronnie Irani, who I mentioned earlier, introduced me to Paul. We met in a hotel in London, and he said, you know, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about addiction. And he started talking to me. Paul runs a treatment center here in Bournemouth, where I'm speaking to you from today, on the south coast of England. At that point, when I was at that house and things were going very badly for me in 2014, I was sleeping on a camp bed. You know, those camp beds that are really low to the floor that people put in tents and stuff. Yeah. So I was just sleeping on this. I wasn't showering for days on end. I was just depressed, just felt dreadful. And I reached out to Paul, I emailed Paul, and I said, Paul, I don't know if you remember me, but we met 2 years ago. And within an hour, he emailed back saying, yes, I remember you. And I said, I need help. He said, come, we'll look after you. 2 days later, I think it was, I was there here in Bournemouth on the 5th of November, 2014. That's the day that I went into rehab. This is the craziness, yeah? This typifies gambling for me. I told you all the things that I used to do when I was gambling, borrow money, steal money, do all of these things, not be worried about the consequences, just wanted to get the next win, just wanted to escape. When Paul said to me, come down to Bournemouth, I was in Birmingham. Now that is, for those of you listening, that is about 140, 150 mile journey. By train, it takes about 3.5 hours. It's a long way. So I contacted my friend John and said, John, I'm going to rehab. Will you help me with the train fare, please? He didn't get back to me all day. And John just spoke about this recently at my 10-year celebration in GA. He didn't get back to me all day because he had to phone the rehab to check that I wasn't lying. I was actually going because I've been lying over the years about money. Anyway, he got back to me and he sent me the ticket on an email. We could still do that then, even 2014, we were able to email tickets. He sent it to me. And then afterwards, I thought to myself, I never thought twice about stealing money to gamble, but I was so worried about jumping the train and not having a ticket.
I get that. I get that. It's like the things that you're willing to do when it comes to gambling are much different than in other aspects. You can't say I'm borrowing this seat on the train. Like, right? When it comes to gambling, you can say, well, I'm borrowing this $100. I'll give it back tomorrow.
Right.
The train is like, oh, that's a business. We can't mess with that. That's a crime. But it's different when it comes to the gambling. I get that.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was like that delusional. I was completely delusional. So that was it. I got to treatment. It was the best 6 months of my life. I'm still here today, you know.
What kind of things did you do at the rehab to begin and then solidify your recovery?
Yeah, I learned about myself, first of all. I learned about my triggers. I learned about dealing with emotions. You know, the number one thing I learned in rehab was about anger. And that anger is effectively a secondary emotion. It's triggered from something else. You're hurt about something, so then you get angry. So these things I started to learn about myself. And I thought, well, if I put barriers in to stop me from getting hurt in the first place, then I'm not going to get angry and then I'm not going to go and gamble. Mm-hmm. You know, and I started to think of it like that. I found it quite difficult at first to kind of identify my behaviors and learn about myself, but I did it in group therapy. You know, so others are pointing out your behavior, you know, which creates resentments and all sorts. But I did that. And then I started going to Gamblers Anonymous. And I remember talking at the meeting and my sponsor, Patrick, who's one of my closest friends today, told me to kind of shut up halfway through sharing because I was rambling on so long, you know. And just complete waffle, basically. And he basically said it in quite a nice way, but I took it really badly at the time, you know, like, who the hell's this guy think he is, you know? Because that's it. I started going to Gamblers Anonymous meetings. And I'm so fortunate that the group that we've got here in Bournemouth, for those of you who don't, no, Gamblers Anonymous is effectively a 12-step program, but it's not all about a 12-step program. It's about that unity. It's about that common theme that we've all got. It's not about differences. It's about our similarities. Mm-hmm. And quickly, you know, I really got into the group. We started going out eating together. We'd play golf. We'd go on holiday. And I must have been to about 4 Gamblers Anonymous weddings now, you know, really built a solid kind of structure. Managed to get a flat, get an apartment to go and live in. I got offered a job back in sport again. I was like, I've been in recovery now for, well, it was 4 years, 5 years at this point. And I just thought, that's not good for me. Mm-hmm. Being back in that environment again, what's that going to do to me? Make me go gambling again. I don't want to live in London anymore. I'm settled here in Bournemouth. I like my life here. I like living by the sea. And so I turned it down. I turned the opportunity down. As always seems to happen in my life, I turn opportunities down and new opportunities come along. Mm-hmm. And that's when the opportunity with Bet No More came along in January 2021, which was during COVID, right? During the lockdown.
What comes to mind is good things happen when you're doing the right thing and you're working on yourself and opportunities present themselves to someone that maybe would try to picture themselves in your position early on there, that's a 3-year gap where someone might be thinking, I need to fix this. I need to pay this back. I need to get going in the right direction, like right now kind of thing. Like that's the mindset I had when I first quit. What was your mindset like those couple of years between, you know, those job offers?
Yeah. So that first, like say the period from 2014 to 2018, 2019, where I was working in the bed shop, where I was working as a removal, house removal, I was doing driving jobs. I was working with my friend Jeff on his market, selling flowers, you know, doing all of these things just to earn some money and start to build my life again. I did start to, as I was doing that, as I started to do it longer and longer, I thought, I need something more challenging. I need something that's more for me again. I couldn't find anything, Rob. I couldn't get there. I could not find the opportunity. And I just knew if one person would give me an opportunity, I could get going. Mm-hmm. I could get my life really starting to build up again. I knew what I was capable of from a work point of view, but I also needed that time. I needed to get rid of the ego, come back down to planet Earth, start to build my life up slowly. And then when I was ready, get to do something, you know? Mm-hmm. And I remember Patrick saying to me a couple of times, him saying, I've seen people that get straight back into careers again, and then they end up falling off the wagon and then this and that, back and forth and back and forth. He said, but what you've really done is you've dedicated your time into your recovery. You've taken the time to do it. Not everybody can do that. Right. I get it. People have got families and careers still. I didn't. I was out. I had no family, nothing. So I had the time to do that, and I managed to build up my resilience, build my mental health back up again. So I applied for the job with Bet No More, met Frankie, our CEO, very quickly, and Frankie and I connected very well, our CEO and founder, who has lived experience himself. And, you know, we had an honest conversation about what this could look like for me. I talked to him about my past, what I'd done work-wise, and I know that he was impressed by my CV and what I'd done in my career. And he said, there will be a pathway for you. Well, here we are today, December 2024, and I'm a director and part of the senior management team. So Frankie, you know, kept his word. I'm blessed to now be doing this job.
What is Bet No More, and what do you do on like a daily basis?
So Bet No More is a charity. We're a nonprofit. We're working in the UK in the National Gambling Support Network, which is us and other nonprofits supporting people who experience gambling harm. So whether that's individuals or affected others, we have three services. We have Peer Aid, which I mentioned just now, which is our peer support service. And I'd say is probably our flagship service, where people who have lived experience of gambling harms are supporting people who are needing it right now. And awesome. They go through an extensive training program to be able to gain that qualification as a peer supporter, specializing in gambling peer support. We then have New Beginnings, which is our women's only program supporting women, and it's ran by women with lived experience again. And then we have Goals, which is our gambling outreach and living support service, which is very much on the ground, working in communities, working with local authorities, public health teams and so forth to support gambling harm. My role, I do a lot of advocacy work. I'm talking a lot to government, to local authorities, and helping them to understand more the gambling harm space. It's been a particularly challenging year for us as an organization, for other organizations in the network, because of the uncertainty around the future of our space. But we've now had some movement on that with the gambling white paper and the announcement that we will have a statutory levy that the industry will pay into, and organisations like ours will be funded through moving forward and working with the NHS and others. So a lot of my work's been focused on that. And the other part has been travelling back and forth to the US, which I've been doing since 2022. So yeah, 3 years now nearly. And I've been working on an initiative called GRIN, and that's the Gambling Recovery Information Network. GRIN is about utilizing voices of lived experience like yourself and like mine and others to support those affected by harm as a peer supporter, perhaps, or could work as in something like a lived experience advisory board, working with regulators, working with the gambling industry around safer gambling and responsible gambling to help them understand more about people who've been affected by gambling harm. And that's what we're moving forwards with now. The real key to peer support is early intervention. I did not want to go to counseling. I didn't want therapy. But if you said to me, we've got somebody you can talk to who's experienced the same things as you, how would you feel about that? I would have snapped your hand off. I said, yes, that's what I need. I don't want the stigma of going to see a clinician at this stage. Now, for some people, yes, that is not to say that clinicians do not have their place. Absolutely, they have their place, but they can work alongside peer support. They should be working hand in hand together. You've got somebody with lived experience who can look at that and have that empathic view of the actual gambling. And then you've got the clinician working alongside them who's getting into that deeper core issues which need addressing around behavior and so forth.
So you went from watching the most watched sporting events all around the world, traveling and living, we'll call it like the high life professionally, to now working with people at the lowest points in their lives to help them move forward. How do you feel about the work that you're doing now in comparison to the work that you were doing before?
I really missed it in the beginning. I really missed the buzz of being at live sports events. Guess what? I can go to them today as a fan. It's even better, you know? Mm-hmm. So I missed that at first. But there were some things that still hit me a little bit. And often I talk about when I worked in sport, I'd go to a lot of soccer matches, football matches. And I remember being at Old Trafford, Manchester United's ground, being in with 80,000 people, having my colleagues sat either side of me, but feeling completely lonely and isolated because of my gambling harm and because of my mental health deterioration. So what happened was about 5 years ago, TalkSport approached me and said, we're doing a book, 20 years of TalkSport, behind the scenes. You were a big part of that, but we'd like to talk to you also about gambling. And would you be prepared to put something in the book about it? So I sat down with the author, Ian Cruz. Cruzy and I worked together when I was there. He's a good man. And he said, look, I'm not going to throw you under the bus. I just want to talk to you more about what happened when you were gambling. I didn't really want to do it at first, but it was actually a really cathartic process. We sat down for three or four hours talking about my whole story, you know, and then got it into the book. And after that, what happened was colleagues would then start reaching out to me. I hadn't heard from them for years because they'd suddenly heard this. They'd read it. They'd read the story. They read about my recovery. They read, you know, where I was going. They probably now then started to understand a bit more about addiction and what happened to me. And I remember a colleague saying to me, like, would you ever come back to this? And I said, no. I'm able today to have a voice. I'm very fortunate in the sense that working for Bet No More and having a profile through that, I'm able to amplify our voice of lived experience. I'm able to talk to people on a level when I'm having professional meetings with government, for example. So I'm not just coming to you from a public relations perspective. I'm talking to you as somebody who has lived experience of gambling. So that adds another level of credibility to the conversation that I'm having. I've met many, many people now from around the world, including yourself, Rob, and Christina and others who I just, you know, really love talking to and seeing, because we've got this common thing that we have lived experience of gambling. Doesn't matter what job we're doing in the space that you're, I mean, I've always been a big fan of that work that you're doing, that content creation, getting to audiences that we cannot get to, that younger audience through those platforms. Or it might be me who's doing a more traditional piece of work where I'm doing that advocacy work with government, but we're all aiming for the same thing. We're trying to stop people getting to the point that we got to. So the answer is, if I can do that and just help one person through that work, then my job is done.
Matt, thank you so much for being on. And to anyone that's watching that wants to learn more about the initiatives that Matt works on, check out the description of this podcast. And if you want to hear a story of someone who's gone through gambling harm themselves as well, then check out this video and let's keep getting better together one day at a time.